You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Good Sunday afternoon to you, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by TechServe, Manhattan's Apple specialist, independent Apple specialist, that is. So thank you to them for their generous sponsorship. And it is being produced and engineered by none other than the talented Nat Wiener. So I'm very excited to welcome Kate Arding, one of the founders of Culture Magazine, onto the show today. I think we have Kate on the line. Kate, are you there?
I am. I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday afternoon to chat with me and be on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And so where are you based right now? Are you upstate New York? Is that...
Well, I'm never quite sure what upstate actually means. I think I'm sort of somewhere in the middle, but I'm really close to the Massachusetts border,
sort
of Great Barrington area.
I love that part of the Northeast. It is so gorgeous.
Yes, it really is, and it's been gorgeous recently, too.
And that's kind of cool, because you're right in the middle of all the cheese action. You've got New York, you've got, the Berkshires and Great Barrington, and you're close to Vermont, and... just kind of the I don't know, where a lot of the action's happening.
Well, it is. And I moved here actually about a year ago. And one of the reasons that I particularly wanted to come to this area was to become a lot more familiar with the producers in the Northeast.
Well, yeah. So can you tell us briefly, obviously you're one of the founders of Culture Magazine, but I feel like if you could tell us a little bit about how you got into cheese and sort of what are some of the different cheese hats that you wear, not like the ones that, are at Green Bay Packer games, but, in terms of jobs. Yeah.
Well, it's, I don't know how brief I can be, but I'll try. I didn't really sort of start my career one morning just waking up and thinking, ooh, I want to do cheese. I want to be involved with cheese. I sort of came at it by a rather circuitous route, first of all involved me going to work for Neal's Yard Dairy, which is a company in London.
Oh, okay.
And this was in the early 90s, and I'd actually come across the shop because I was making deliveries there. I was at the time working for my uncle's business, which is a small company in the UK that makes mustards and sauces, and I was making deliveries there in a ripped jeans and a baseball hat, carrying tray loads of mustard. And I walked into the shop, and I was just like, wow! It was wall to wall cheese, but above and beyond that, it was really a very different atmosphere from most of the upscale food shops that I had also delivered to, which had been quite snotty in their sort of atmosphere and so on. And Neal's Yard was the antithesis of that. You walked in and
they were all wearing baseball caps and jeans too.
Exactly. I felt I was coming home.
Yeah.
but they were sort of very inclusive and very welcoming, and quite apart from this overwhelming sort of display of cheese, because they do at least at that point they did the maturing actually in the shop, there was this great atmosphere. The people behind the counter were engaged and busy and immediately sort of made you feel welcome and handed you a sample of cheese. And it wasn't as if they were sort of saying, well, here's a sample, what do you think? It was like, oh, here, try this, it just came in. And it was just very seductive. And being of a somewhat greedy nature, I loved that.
Oh, me too. I never refuse a free sample.
Exactly. And so anyway, to cut a long story short, I ended up working there.
Were you a monger? Were you behind the counter?
Yes. Well, initially everybody kind of did a stint on retail, which was good. But I was actually very clear that I wanted to work in the wholesale side, which was fairly recent. This is going back to about 1993. And at the time, the sort of British food revolution was starting to kick in, not a moment too soon, I may add.
Yeah.
And although we didn't really realize it at the time, you know, it was, when you're in the thick of it, it's hard to see what's going on about you. But I was always very interested in working with sort of restaurants and the stores. And so, yes, that's what I had really applied to do. And as luck would have it, there was an opening in a very sort of embryonic wholesale department, which occupied a sort of 8-foot by 10-foot space on the landing.
That is so heartening to hear that that's like the size of it. Because Neil's Yard now, it is like the temple of cheese. You go there and to the arches and it's just like, you know, it's amazing how much beautiful cheese they have there.
It's wonderful to see it. And when I was there in the early days, it was a very different sort of, I mean, the atmosphere I think is very similar now, but the location was, you know, a lot more cramped. They still do have that location actually in Shorts Gardens. But so that was my introduction, and that's really where I sort of cut my teeth on it. And again, I was too naive to understand it at the time, but you know what was really going on was remarkable, and I was learning so much, you know, and absorbing so much from the other members of staff and from Randolph Hodgson, the owner. And not just about cheese itself, although obviously that comes into it too, but also about the philosophy of Neil's Yard Dairy and what that really means, which is to maintain, you know, very strong links with the producers. And that was the innovative thing for the time. I mean, now it's a lot more commonplace, which is great. But at the time, it was quite unusual. So that really proved to be a great foundation for me.
And so that through that job, were you able to go out and meet the producers that you guys bought from and see their cheese making operations and sort of learn what it was to actually make the cheese as well?
Yes, I mean, we did. I mean, we used to take turns, you know, going out and actually collecting the cheeses from the farms, which was wonderful because it meant you could watch the cheese making, get to know the people behind it, understand, you know, where they were coming from and what they were trying to achieve in making the cheeses in these ways. And it just makes you proud to sell them. You know, it's as simple as that.
Because you've taken a part in it, and you've had a conversation and you've spent a day, and it's just
exactly
meaningful.
Exactly, and it's people behind the cheese, particularly for me, that motivates me. I mean, obviously, I love eating cheese, clearly, but it's the people behind it who are essentially farmers, you know, mostly, who, you know, really, really motivate me to sort of work with it.
It's the same for me. Somebody asked me once why I started my shop and why I focused on, you know, solely American cheeses. And for me, it was really, yeah, just having traveled around and met people and really not only so enjoying my time with everyone, but having that understanding of how each person goes about making cheese. And I feel like when you taste cheese, if you've met the person, you can really sort of trace it back to their methodologies and their personal philosophy. And that's kind of the most exciting and inspiring part of being able to sell cheese the way that Neil's Yard does, or the way that we do. And it's really it's an exciting thing.
Absolutely, it is. And I feel very privileged really to get to know these people, you know, as well, and to build relationships, you know, and become friends with many of them. So yeah, it was a great foundation.
And from there, so how did you find? How did you make your way from London to the U.S. and what else have you been up to along the way?
Well, it was it's quite a, again, serendipity played a strong part in this. But I was at the dairy, as I say, and working downstairs in these sort of fairly damp but very lively conditions, and we had, as you can imagine, we had quite a lot of visitors coming through that, you know, one way and another to sort of see what we were up to, because the word was beginning to get out at that point. And one day we had two visitors, Sue Conley and Peggy Smith.
Cowgirl Creamery.
Exactly. Who came to stop by, and partly because I was working, you know, predominantly with restaurants, I had heard of Chez Panisse in Berkeley, which is where Peggy had been working, and for a very long time. And so I was very excited, you know, to go and meet her and Sue. And we just started talking, and you know, we got on really well, and they were keen to go and see a couple of the farms. And as luck would have it, I had a little time off. So we piled into my Morris Minor car and sort of chugged off down the motorway to go and visit the Neal's Yard Creamery in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And another place as well. And we just had a great couple of days. And in the course of this, they told me of their plans, which at that point were sort of pipe dream, to start what was then called Tamales Bay Foods. And this was 1995. So Tamales Bay Foods, which is the sort of parent company, if you like, of Cowgirl Creamery at that point, was a marketing company, a very, very small one, started by Sue, with a vision to enhance a sort of regional food identity, if you like, for Marin County, just north of San Francisco.
Mm.
And she was working with Bellwether Farms and the Strauss Family Creamery, and also Redwood Hill Farms, just those three clients, and had started at the little local farmers market in Point Reyes. So it was really embryonic, but they had this very clear vision that they wanted to convert a barn in Point Reyes and turn it into a creamery and essentially a sort of permanent farmers market. That was the original idea, and I thought, ooh, that sounds really fun. So anyway,
sounds really fun. Not too bad scenery wise either.
Well, exactly, and that was the one of the things that got me, because I had some holiday, some vacation owing, the way Europeans do, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little time, and so I thought, oh, I'll come out and visit them. And they couldn't have been more generous and showed me this concept. And I absolutely fell head over heels in love with the area and the whole idea. And anyway, again, to sort of cut a long story short, you know, started the ball rolling for a visa, which, as anybody who's undergone that process will know, is very time-consuming.
To say the least, yeah.
Yes, and then, 2 years later, actually the official opening day of Cowgirl Creamery in Point Reyes, I made it by 8 hours with jet lag. So I was just standing there, slightly dazed and confused, not quite sure where I was, sort of going, hello, you know.
Hello.
And it went from there, so yeah.
Wow. Okay, so then you were at, so you worked with Peggy and Sue for how long?
I was there until, I think it was either 2003 or 2004. It gets a bit hazy.
Yeah.
but it was an amazing time. I mean, it really was, and it was so exciting. I mean, I had no idea really what I was getting into or how long I'd even be here. But essentially what they were doing was forming or helping to form a tradition, you know, and this is the way I kind of view it. You know, in England, we've been very much concerned at that time with trying to preserve various cheesemakers from going out of business and trying to help them survive. And this was a whole other world, because it was like starting with a clean slate, you know, which was incredibly exciting. There was no template to follow, nothing. Although Sue and Peg actually did clearly model the business after Neal's Yard, which, of course, was a large part of the reason I was there. And it was really fun. It was a roller coaster. I mean, we had no idea what we were doing, but it was great fun and very exciting to see things happen. But it didn't happen right away. I remember standing on my little retail counter behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this very small selection of what I thought were knockout, you know, local cheeses. And people would come in and sort of say, you know, do you have any brie? You know, do you have any cheddar?
Oh,
do you have any
that
Jack?
Old question.
And I was, you know, replying, well, I don't have any Brie, but I have, you know, the Redwood Hills Camellia, and I felt like this broken record, you know, for ages. In fact, the way I put it was sort of Billy Graham of the cheese world. And so I just sat there and sat there. And after about sort of 6 or 9 months of this, I did actually think, what have I done? You know?
Yeah. These Americans don't understand anything.
Well, I did. But then suddenly there was this sea change, you know, and that was what was so fascinating to witness, you know, and it was a combination of, you know, the media and, you know, cheesemakers, you know, working their socks off and new people wanting to get into it. And simultaneously, as these new cheeses were starting to appear on the market, there were also an increase in the number of retailers and in the and distributors, and the level of knowledge, you know, was just increasing, you know, tangibly, you know, almost in front of our very eyes. And so whilst obviously the producers play a really important part, I think it's also essential to realize that it's across the board, you know, because the producers couldn't exist, you know, and make a success of it without a lot of good support from retailers. Oh,
and
from
the education and the Billy Grahams of the world who stand there and say, okay, this is this is what this tastes like. This is who made it. I mean, yeah, it's an incredible amount of work.
Well, it is, but it's so exciting, you know, and to see it happen so quickly, I mean, that was the astounding thing to me. I mean, it really was. Yeah, I mean, it was happening in front of our very eyes. You know, we just couldn't keep up. I mean, we just, you know, it was for a while there, you know, and but it was, you know, really hats off to Sue and Peg for making that leap. You know, I was very, very fortunate to be in on the ground floor with them on that. So that taught me a tremendous amount.
And got you in really at the ground floor of the American sort of cheese renaissance, which of course started before that, but I feel like really started to gain momentum in the early mid 90s and has just kind of, you know, blossomed incredibly ever since, to the point now where it's very hard to keep track of all the action.
It is. But I think it's also as we've, you know, I've been here 13 years now, as we've grown, you know, as an industry, I think there's a maturity creeping into, which I think is terrific, you know, and I'm very aware.
Is that a cheese pun?
Oh, sorry.
Mature. No, I'm just kidding.
Not intentional. But I think, you know, what's very exciting, and this was particularly brought home to me recently with this event, which I know Adam Moskowitz was talking about on your show recently, about the Cheesemonger Invitational, and to see this new generation of younger cheesemongers and cheesemakers and retailers and distributors, you know, bringing their energy and their perspective into the scene, and essentially starting to take over the baton. You know, it's very exciting, I think.
Yeah,
you know, there's so much energy and passion there, and they're seeing it in a different way to how I did and maybe you did, but no lesser for that. It's very cool.
No,
very cool.
It's a process of evolution, and it's definitely, you know, it's just taking it even. It's making an already complex system complex in a good way. It's making it even more complex, and kind of, you know, taking the roots and spreading them and going deeper, and, you know, just honing the craft even more. So, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back from the break, I would love to talk with you a bit about Culture Magazine and all the good work that's happened there. So stay with us on Cutting the Curd.
Who feels
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by TechServe and produced and engineered by Nat Wiener. And my guest is the lovely Kate Arting, who is a lady about town in the world of cheese. And in addition to all the good work that we've been talking about so far, is one of the founders of Culture Magazine, which I'm holding in front of me right now. It's a gorgeous issue. It's all about ricotta, and it's making me very hungry.
That's the idea.
What is it about cheese photography? It's just like cheese lends itself. It has that, like, you know, just absolutely come hither look about it. And it's like, I don't know. It seems like some of these pictures should be illegal.
Well, we have had several people refer to the publication as cheese porn. So, partly brought on because we have this cheese centerfold in each issue.
Looking at it, at the Tome de Bordeaux. This is a sexy cheese indeed.
Yes, we've had a few emails from various cheesemongers saying that they've actually pinned them up on the staff lockers. So I'm not quite sure where to go with that.
Isn't that funny? It's like when you go to the garage to get your car fixed, it's like the Corona girl in like a bikini, and when you go to the cheese shop, it's the Tome de Bordeaux in the locker room.
I know, but I love that geeky aspect of it, actually, personally.
Yeah, oh, I do too. but this is an incredible publication. Can you tell our listeners about Culture Magazine and how it got started?
Yes, well, we were the origins of it actually were about, 2 years ago now. And one of my close friends, Thalassa Skinner, who has been running the Oxbow Cheese Merchants in the Napa Valley, mm-hmm. and I, who've known each other for years, were sitting having a beer one evening, the way we do, and her sister, Stephanie Skinner, happened to be visiting from the East Coast. And Stephanie is a veteran magazine publisher of huge experience. Anyway, about three beers into the conversation, Stephanie stood up in a manner that I now recognize very well and said, rather confrontationally, so how come nobody's doing a magazine about cheese? And Lassa and I looked at each other and sort of shrugged and said, well, I don't know. And and so Stephanie said, well, let's do it. And we went, yeah, let's do it. And, of course, neither Lassa or I had a clue how to even
sure.
go about that. So anyway, to her eternal credit, Stephanie kept sort of, you know, niggling away at this and said, you know, if we don't do it, somebody else is going to. And so we sort of moved forward, and then a year later, actually it was 3 years ago now, I'm thinking.
Wow.
Yeah, so a year later, we actually managed to get the funding together and launched it. And, of course, between inception, which was really that June, July, and the actual first issue coming out, which was December 2008, the world's economies collapsed, and everybody said, you know, you're absolutely crazy if you continue with this project. I mean, not only that, but the world of publishing is just on it, print media anyway, is sort of on its knees.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah,
so
everyone's struggling.
Well, exactly. So I think, you know, sometimes naivety, at least on my part, could be a good thing. And we thought, well, we've just got to give this a try. And so we did. And we launched on a shoestring budget. And we kept the sort of pennies really tight. And it really has just grown tremendously. And I think an enormous part of that is the wonderful, wonderful support we've had from, you know, a huge number of people from within the industry, you know, but also outside too, and the readers and the people who seem to take such a huge interest and a lively interest in what we do. And that's what makes it really fun. You know, it is obviously a magazine, and we have now a robust and companion website. The magazine's not online, but, you know, we have a Facebook community now of over 11,000 fans.
Wow.
Which tells you a lot. And it's just, I actually view it personally in many ways as rather similar to being a cheesemonger, you know, because, yes, we've got this, you know, what I think is lovely magazine, but it people come and buy the magazine because they want to know about the cheeses and the producers. You know, they're not coming to it because of us. You know, we're the conduit. And I think that's the philosophy that we've really adopted right from the start. You know, I think the minute that you start to let your egos get in the way, you're in trouble. So if we make it all about the people that we're writing about and the cheeses and the stories, you know, a lot of the rest of it just naturally follows. And I think people pick up on that.
Well, and it's interesting because in the magazine, I mean, I'm just going to go through the table of contents for this magazine. We have Remains of the Way about making ricotta, which includes recipes that you can make at home as well as profiles of ricotta. You have Cabrales, so you're profiling, you know, a wonderful Spanish blue. There is a story about Zingerman's Creamery in Ann Arbor and the cheesemaker who started that business along with Ari Weisenzweig and his partner. There is a photojournalism essay about a shepherd bringing goats, you know, up the hills and in the Pyrenees. And so I think that one of the things that that culture does really well is highlight the incredible diversity of experiences and jobs and livelihoods also that can be built around cheese. And I feel like a large part of your Facebook fanship is probably seeking to find, you know, if they could participate in some way. And so I feel like it's an excellent conduit for people to kind of, you know, dream a little bit and see how they might participate in this world, which we know and love, but which also continues to grow and needs more people involved in it, from, you know, cheesemakers to cheese sellers to cheese distributors, everybody that we've been talking about.
Exactly, and I think it's sort of, in a way, it's sort of armchair cheese eating, or travel, you know, all rolled into one. And I think the other factor, which is really important in contributing to making this magazine, you know, the success that it is having, you know, having such a great editorial and team. You know, we have a terrific editor, Elaine Cosrover, and a wonderful designer, Hilary Lewis, who does all the layouts. And, you know, we have a very small nucleus of people, really, but they've all come from the publishing and the professional world. And I think that's what makes culture as a consumer publication much more accessible and less of a what it could be if, which would be a trade publication, if we had all industry people writing these articles, like me. That's why I don't write very much, because I tend to get too geeky. You know, and it's interesting, you know, because I remember in early meetings, you know, and I was talking about Alpine cheeses and how we should do an article on this and that, and there was this sort of row of blank faces and sort of saying, well, what on earth's an Alpine cheese? You know, and that's, but it's an important...
You have to have that input. That is the most important thing to have.
It is, and it is, because it's from the outside looking in, which is what makes it, you know, what puts our profession, the sort of cheesemongering profession, into understandable language, you know, for people who are just interested and you know,
or just
involved.
Getting into it, yeah.
Exactly.
Because,
exactly.
Yeah, the magazine is incredibly dense with information and with beautiful pictures, from profiling cheese shops to having a grilled cheese recipe every issue to, you know, highlighting cheese festivals. And so I think you guys hit kind of that perfect timber of giving good information for everyone, from cheese neophytes to... you know, like self-proclaimed cheese geeks like me. I've been like devouring the issue all week.
Well, thank you, because I know Elaine will be particularly happy to hear that, because actually we do spend an inordinate amount of time, not just with each issue, but with across the spread of issues, in trying to obtain that balance, you know, so that, you, for instance, when we're considering the content for each issue, we want to make sure that there's a good geographical spread, for instance, you know, that it's both U.S. domestic and some international, even gender of the cheesemaker, You know, all sorts of things. You know, cow, sheep, goat balance. I mean, there's a tremendous. It's rather like putting together a cheese display. You know, there's all these things that one needs to think about to achieve that balance and to appeal to the to a wide audience.
Absolutely. Well, someone was asking me the question the other day, and I guess it would be a good one to ask you. You know, because there is such a broad range of topics to be discussed, and there is such a broad range of experience that your readers have. How do you put together the issues with regard to, you know, when do you put in the article about how do you wrap and store cheeses versus, you know, do you put that in issue one and then, you know, move on to more complex things in subsequent issues? Or it seems like you're able to kind of juggle that very well so that anyone could subscribe at any time and kind of, you know, find the basics as well as finding more in-depth information should they want it.
Well, that comes back to the point we were just making, you know, that we do look at each issue very carefully. We don't want to assume that somebody's been subscribing from the start, because that we try and be as inclusive as we possibly can. So there are some articles, I mean, when you look through the magazine, you'll see that there are sort of major features, which I can now say because I know this phrase, being in the trade now, called well articles, which are the main features, you know, with the biggies, in other words. And we plan those a long way out. You know, we're planning those probably about a year ahead, mainly because we want to get photography that's seasonally correct. You know, so for instance, we can't have an article that's going to be coming out in the summer, you know, taken of a farm where there's snow on the ground, you know, because that would look a bit crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So we're sort of planning a year ahead and on those big ones, those big pieces. And then the less time-sensitive ones, we have, you know, we're always on the lookout for those. We're always writing them. We're always sort of building up a stock of those. But equally, we're getting much better now about planning.
Oh, my goodness, that is admirable.
Were nuts. I mean, the first issue was quite good because we had the luxury of this lead time. And then I remember Stephanie actually saying, you know, the rubber really meets the road between the first and second issues. And my goodness, she wasn't joking.
You could smell
it. Suddenly you're on a deadline, you know. And it's so funny because when I was, you know, working full-time behind the cheese counter, and I'd get these calls from journalists, you know, yelling at me, I need this now, you know. Blah, blah.
And you're like, relax.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Stupid people, why can't they just get organized? Now I find myself doing exactly the same thing. So I have to say, I mean, coming from both sides of the fence, it's astounding how much work is involved in publishing. I have to say, I have a whole new respect for people, you know, in that world. It is, we always think, I always thought cheesemongering was a lot of work, and it is, but this is takes it to a whole other level, but in a different way. You know, it's very cool. I feel very, very lucky to be part of this.
Well, I feel very lucky that you have decided to put your effort into it, because it is just a wealth of information. And it is, yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful publication. I wanted to ask you, we just have a few minutes left, but are there any sort of tangible success stories that you can, or success stories might not be the exact right way to say it, but people who have come to different realizations or different jobs or different life changes through Culture Magazine?
Gosh, that is a good question. Apart from me, you mean? gosh, I can't really answer that. I don't know. I think we'd have to throw that out there to the audience. I mean, I hope that we're inspiring people. You know, we try to, and I think, again, just by being a conduit rather than us actually inspiring people, but by just telling the stories of what other people have done and are doing and trying to tell it in a very honest and in-depth way, you know, not trying to paint the picture sort of as being overly rosy. You know, it's one of the things when people come up to me and say, oh, I really want to be a cheesemaker. You know, and I, the first thing I say to them is, do you like cleaning?
Exactly. That is a recurrent theme on the show.
It's a very recurrent theme. You know? And so I think, you know, and that we try and put that into the articles. I don't just mean the cleaning. I mean, but just try and paint an honest portrait of, you know, these individual stories, because, as you know, they're so wide-ranging. I mean, this is partly what's so fascinating about the cheese world to me is that...
So much of it is serendipity, I feel like, just like you were saying with your own story. It's just you know, people fall into it in unexpected ways.
They do, and for a variety of reasons, and sometimes it's because they don't have a choice. I mean, I've been with my old consulting hat on over the years, you know, I've worked a lot in Wisconsin with some cheesemakers there who were literally, had been making, you know, fairly standard sort of block cheddars and so on, and finding they couldn't sell them anymore, and so it was, okay, well, we need to change, and i.e. go into sort of more artisanal or farmstead route, or go out of business. Mm. That's the sort of harsher end, and I'm happy to say that in most cases it's really worked. You know, other times it's, you know, back to the land people, you know, people who've had other careers, others who have taken over the reins from their parents or even their grandparents. I mean, there are as many stories as you could possibly imagine, but the common denominator is this passion for cheese, and I don't know how else to put it, but that it's so infectious, you know, and it's a world that, you know, I think both you and I love, and in my case certainly has been very good to me.
Absolutely. Well, I have one quick story that I can share from you know, chatting with people about what Culture Magazine has done for them. Back about 2 weeks ago, during the Fancy Food Show, I was invited to visit these caves in Bed-Stuy, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn, and this gentleman, who's very industrious, very handy, has a metal shop, has a letterpress, has an amazing garden, is growing a lot of his food right where he lives, has a home with a green roof, also has an incredible sort of building out behind the apartment build, or the building that he and his wife refurbished that used to be a brewery, and these caves down in the ground about 30 feet.
Wow.
Under the street level. And he found these caves, and he thought that, you know, he'd like to age some cheese there. And he had gotten in touch with Peter Dixon, who's the cheesemaker at Consider Bardwell Farm, from Culture Magazine, because you guys had listed one of Peter's cheesemaking workshops. And so he had gone up to Vermont and met Peter and made cheese with him. I think he attended two workshops and then invited Peter to his place in Brooklyn to see these caves and see what they might do together. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
Oh, that is wonderful. So, I'm so glad you told me that.
Yeah, so there are just these little seeds. I think for your Facebook page, maybe people should contribute and see, you know, they should write in their stories, like if Culture Magazine has, you know, has provided that link for them in some ways, because I bet it would be an amazing outpouring.
I'm sure it would. I mean, I think that's a wonderful idea. So go do it, people.
Go do it, people, yes.
I think that would be, because we have, you know, a very lively bunch of fans, or now they seem to be called likes, I think, on Facebook, which has been a very useful exercise for us, because it also shows us what people are interested in too. So it's, yeah, there's so many wonderful stories. You know, I could go on all afternoon.
I know. Well, I'm tempted to, but I'm seeing that unfortunately we are out of time for this afternoon. But I thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come on the show and tell us about your cheesy experiences. And I hope you'll join us again for a future show.
Well, thank you so much. It's been really fun chatting with you, and I'd love to.
Absolutely. All right. Well, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.